And I was never homesick. We had fellows with us that were, that was all, they were just so homesick it was pitiful. And I never was. And I
Why is that?
I don't know. I was amazed because I was married and loved my wife and everything, but I was not homesick. In fact, I don't think I ever missed a night of sleep. And then it's when I didn't start to, I started missing nights of sleep after I came home. I had a terrible time, I still do. But during the war, I didn't have any trouble at all. So it's amazing how some people are different. I know on this hospital ship coming home, we had one fellow that was, he knew he was going home, and still he was so homesick that he wouldn't even get out of the bunk. They had tiers of, three deep, I think it was, on this hospital ship, for, or two deep, I don't remember that exactly. And he wouldn't even get out of bed, and he was just homesick. And I don't think he was a combat guy either. As I recall, he was a Jewish boy from New York. And I thought that was the most pitiful thing, to be homesick. Because you can't do a job if you're homesick. I don't think. Of course, maybe that's my own opinion, and it's wrong.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
But there you were, and so you landed in Scotland, as you say.
Right, Glasgow, Scotland.
And where did you? Where did they send you?
Then they put us on a train, and we went to Southampton. I think it was Southampton, England, and stayed there overnight and boarded the LCI and across the channel and went in Omaha Beach. And Omaha Beach was just a clutter. It was sunken ships and stuff, but there was no fighting there because that was way miles inland. But it was a mess yet. They hadn't cleaned it up, you know. It took years, I suppose, to get all them ships and stuff out of there. And that went then to a staging camp and wasn't there only. They needed evidently machine gun squads. So that's where I landed.
And how long were you engaged in battle before you got captured?
30 days, and it was a long 30 days, because Patton moved. See, the reason we were captured is because these tanks ran out of gas, and the infantry, he said, oh, we can take them. That was rumors afterwards, and he said, we'll send the infantry ahead. Well, he did. He sent the infantry ahead, and the Germans, in about 2 days, they figured out he didn't have any tanks, and they counterattacked. We took a little town about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they decided to set, we had one TD gun, set the two machine gun squads up and the TD gun, and we'd stay there that night. The rest pulled back to a mile or so, and we stayed there to guard the road. And in the night, we could hear rumbling. It was a valley down there and a little creek or a stream of some kind and trees. We could hear tanks rumbling. So we sent word back to headquarters that we should pull out of there because I think they're going to counterattack. They sent word back, no, both machine gun squads and the TD guns stay there. Everybody else pulls out. Well, they attacked at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and we fought there till we got back to a house and set up our machine gun, and we, as soon as the tanks could go by, we'd shoot at their infantry. And of course, we held out until 4 or 5 o'clock that afternoon. They came back with a tank, and they fired one round in the house. The first machine gun squad got killed because right off the reel, they shot at this tank with a machine gun. Well, you don't stop a tank with a machine gun. And we knew better, and we weren't going to open fire on it, so we ran back. It was about probably 50 yards to this house and got inside, set that up in the doorway, And then when the tanks went by and the infantry came by, then we start shooting at them. And when they came back with this tank, they were going to get us out. Well, while they were trying to get us out, we each had a window and one guy on the machine gun in the doorway. And I saw a helmet go by my window, and I dropped a grenade out. And just a few minutes, a grenade came in that room I was in.
They threw it back?
One of theirs.
Threw it back at you?
Yeah, threw one end at me. Well, I was right by the door, and I jumped out. And it went off, and I picked up a few shrapnel wounds. And then I went down the hall, and it was a doorway, I suppose 8 foot away, and here comes a German in, and he looked the wrong way. And if he'd have looked my way, he would have got me because he had a burp gun.
Oof.
But he looked the wrong way.
And
I fired, and two or three, and he fell forward. So we kept staying there, and the guy said, well, he said, you know, with that tank, they're going to bury us in here, and they're hollering for us to surrender. He said, when one guy said, I'm going out, I'd rather get shot going out and get buried. He went out, and they didn't do anything, so the rest of us went out.
To surrender?
Surrendered.
Which, it doesn't sound like you had much choice.
You're either going to die in there or surrender, because they were going to get us out. Because we'd killed, they knew the guy that we got the grenade on, he was dead outside or blown apart.
And then there was the other German soldier
he was dead inside the house.
Right, and it sounds like if you hadn't gotten him, he would have gotten you.
Oh, he'd have got me. If he'd have turned my way, he had a burp gun. You know, that's a machine pistol that the Germans had.
Right, that shoots several rounds in seconds.
Yeah. And all I had then in my hand was an M1, and he would have got me instantly.
Do you feel fortunate that you got the drop on him, that he looked the wrong way?
Oh, I feel sorry for years because he fell so that his face was towards me and his eyes were open and the blood was running out of his mouth. And it got me for years. And I'm talking about it now. You evidently are different to talk to than that lady up at the VA, that POW doctor. I don't know.
Well, I have I have some skill, I guess, but I'm also fascinated by the stories of people like yourself who are part of that, you know, greatest generation. It sounds like you've struggled with this, but have you been able to say to yourself, you know, I did what I had to do? Have you been able to reconcile it that way?
Yes, I do, in the sense that I say it was either he or I. I could have said, I'm over here, you know, and I'd have been done. So in that sense, but I still feel I was doing my duty, but it was just a young fellow, probably 18 years old, he looked like it.
You were young too, though.
When I was 26, so I was...
But still young?
Yeah, still
with a wife waiting for you at home and your whole life ahead of you?
Yeah, young. But it was better. It turned out a heck of a lot better than it could have been.
Sure.
That's for sure.
You're here today.
Yeah, here today. I spent 8 months in hospitals afterwards recuperating.
Well, let's backtrack. You were surrounded in the house. The Germans had you surrounded, so you had to come out and surrender, and because there was no chance for you. And so you were taken prisoner. And what happened? Where did they send you, and how did that all unfold?
Well, they sent us first to a concentration camp at Lindbergh, Germany. And there they interviewed you and a couple of times, and that was the first time I got beat up was there. No, that was the second time. Then they sent us to a Stalag 7A at Moosburg, Germany, which was quite 2 nights and 2 days on the train, and that was the worst part of the whole thing outside of, after what happened later. But at the time, we were packed in there so solid that we finally decided if half of us stood up, then the other half could sit down or lay down. But if you all couldn't lay down or sit down at the same time. So we had enough sense to do that because it was on there two days and two nights, no water, and it was September. It was, of course, it cooled off at night, but during the day it got hot.
It was this time of year, September?
Yeah. It was 26th day of September. And they strafed the plane, or a plane strafed the train, but then not a bullet went in our cab, or what do you call those, boxcar, they call them. You've seen them on
sure.
these shows where they're hauling the people to the gas chambers, those little
right,
boxcars.
Right.
Well, they had that so stacked that you couldn't all sit down, you know.
It sounds like the experience, what you experienced, was very similar to what a Jewish prisoner or somebody being sent off to the...
On those train rides. Well, it was terrible. The fact is, when we got out of that train, when they finally got to this Stalag 7A, we were so thirsty, and there was a spigot out in the yard, and they fought like animals. We did. We were all animals then, trying to get to water, really. We were so thirsty. You go, that thirst is the worst part.
Did at any point, did you, and, you know, I can't imagine what it would have been like, but did you inquire as to, okay, why aren't you giving us water, or why aren't they giving us any water?
Well, they never opened the boxcar door.
They just threw you in there and just figured...
Put us in there and we started rolling and that was it.
So much for the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, that was one of the worst things, that ride. Or anybody that took those boxcars. Well, one fellow said, I'm going to get me a German when they open that door. Well, they got him. They didn't. I don't know whether he lived or not, but they just beat him up. He jumped out. Of course, he jumped on a German guard. Well, he wasn't too smart, you know, because he had no chances. I don't know whether he lived or died, but he marched us off.
And you had, you know, you had already been beaten up by the Germans. And why was that? They were trying to get information out of you?
Well, the first time I got beat up was, it was kind of cool, and we put our... Those fatigues over ODs. Patton made the frontline troop wear ODs. And we're the only ones in his outfit that didn't have to wear a necktie, was the frontline guys. The rear echelon, they had to wear a necktie, even if you were a cook. And he was strict that way. And the first time I got slammed was the day... I was captured. They took us into a German officer, could speak English, and asked some questions. He said, empty your pockets. Well, we emptied them once, but I had a belt around there, and I reached down, and be darned if I didn't have another grenade, and I pulled it out, and he was like sitting where you are. He hit the deck, and the guy's back then clobbered me. So then I guess it was 2 days later when they interviewed me again. I don't know what I said, because you're only supposed to say your serial number and rank. And the guy hit me again in the back, and then the VA, at home, it shows where I've got two vertebrae. Well, I draw disability on it. They hit me and busted two vertebrae some way, but my back doesn't bother that bad.
Did you get any kind of medical treatment between then and going on the train and going to the prison,
oh, no.
The POW camp?
No, had nothing. No.
When did a doctor finally look at you?
American doctor in a prison camp looked at me. I got, it's the pneumonia or a cold or something, and he got a hold of some sulfur drugs. And the day before Christmas, I got yellow jaundice and passed out, and I never came to until the day. Well, when I came to, I said to the guys, I said, well, tomorrow is Christmas. They said, buddy, he said, tomorrow isn't Christmas. He said, you missed Christmas, and this is the 3rd of January.
Wow.
And from then on, then my ankle swelled up where that little piece of shrapnel was in. And Gordon Keppel, Captain Keppel, was the American doctor that came in, and he said, I'm going to bring a German doctor in to look at it, too. And he brought a German doctor in, and it was swelled up huge. And they loved to cut off the legs. They'd cut off a leg of a guy the day before. He said, they want to cut your foot off, but don't let them. He said, we're going to try something. And he took his hands, and he just squeezed like that, and a pus and this little piece of shrapnel, about
came
an inch
out?
Long, or less than an inch probably, came out.
Wow.
And it started healing up. That was in January, I think.
Saved your foot.
Saved my foot.
I can see why you remembered his name.
Yeah, Gordon Keppel. Hmm. And that's how I got the Purple Heart. I never said anything. Never, you know, when I was getting discharged, I spent 8 months in the hospitals here in the States. The doctor examined me. He said, well, that doesn't look very good down there on your ankle. He said, what is that? And I said, well, they took a little piece of shrapnel out of that in the prison camp. He said, who was the doctor? I said, and I gave him the name and never thought nothing about it. I was home, and in February, I got a registered partial from the War Department, and there was the Purple Heart. I never knew I was getting it. But they evidently contacted this Keppel, and he must have told them. Because you got to have some record. And I didn't have any. Had nobody to verify it. But I got it. I got a long letter explaining that you... It was... You remember that?
Yeah.
Postmaster, or the post guy delivering the mail come in. He says, I got a package. And he said, what do you suppose it is? Oh, I said, probably some trinket. I said, they forgot. Probably they gave you a good conduct badge or something. Opened it up, and it was that. And that was the biggest surprise I got out of the Army.
It was a few months after the doctor tried the successful maneuver with your foot that got the shrapnel out. It was probably, 4 or 5 months later that you finally made it out of the prison camp. Describe being liberated. What was that like?
Oh, that was the greatest thing in the world. They started the day before this. We got out. I had there was a Colonel McNichol. They played football. Two brothers. And they were both generals when they retired. But at that time, he was a colonel. And he sent a message, because I had got a hold of some ick. I was outside the camp. Those that couldn't go anyplace, couldn't just hobble around, they put in a gravel pit outside of the camp, and we just slept on the ground from March until we was liberated. And he sent a note out. I got a hold of cigarettes in this Red Cross partial, and a couple cigarettes you could get 4 or 5 potatoes. Or 4 or 5 eggs, and I got a couple eggs, and I knew he hadn't had any eggs, and I went in the camp because I had this pass signed by the German commandant, and I still got that. It says, I do not have to work. I'm disabled. And I took this pass and went in the main gate where he was and gave him this eggs. And so the day before we were liberated, he sent a note down. He said, we'll be out of here in a day or two. Now, he had got, somebody got probably shot down and then came in and said they were nearly there. But anyhow, he hit it right on the button. That was on a Friday, and on a Sunday, they shelled the camp, all around the camp, and we were liberated. But then it was a madhouse, and whoever was in charge of that infantry division that liberated said, nobody will leave, everybody stay right here. And the guy that they put in charge, supposed to be in charge of everybody, some colonel, and he was the first one that was gone. He, next morning, he's gone. He wasn't going to wait to get, he went back. Hmm. He wasn't putting up with any more German food or beets and soup. So that's the way it ended.